o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show. Gambo's back after the last couple of days off. Good to have him back.
It was nice to be back.
It's good to have you back.
Yeah, nice to be back.
Yeah. Luke did a great job filling in for you. It's good to have you back.
Yeah. I'm sure he did.
Luke, shout out
Luke
Lipinski.
Is a consummate professional.
Shout out for Luke Lipinski. Yes.
He's a good pinch hitter.
No doubt.
Solid.
No doubt. He stays prepared down there in that tunnel, and he's taking his
Don't have to
wax.
Get ready if you stay ready.
Exactly. You don't have to get ready if you stay ready. That's the phrase I was searching for. It was a week ago today. We had the NFL draft and our draft coverage. And, of course, it was a busy day. There was a lot going on. A lot of Aaron Rodgers talk. And there was a lot of talk about the Cardinals. We had the Gambo 5. We were trying to figure out how it was all going to break and what was going to happen. And, of course, all eyes, quite frankly, were on that pick in front of the Arizona Cardinals at number 15, and it was Mac Jones.
Yes.
And it was wondering how the quarterback situation was going to break. It was wondering if Mac Jones was going to be there at 15 or if the Patriots were going to pass on him and he was going to be available for the Cardinals at 16 and maybe somebody would trade up in that spot. You had spoken a lot about Zaven Collins. He obviously ended up being the pick. There was some thought that maybe the Patriots would take Zaven Collins at number 15, but obviously when the quarterback fell to their lap, they didn't. And then there's this. And this we just read today. It was a story on the Athletic website about Mac Jones and the Patriots. Okay?
Okay.
So picture, and we're big fans of the Athletic, but it's kind of a longer story.
Okay.
This was by no means the main part of this story. Okay? It was way down at the bottom. It's this Mac Jones piece about him and the Patriots. But at the very bottom of the story, quote, Belichick and McDaniels liked what they saw, but they still needed some luck to get Jones in the draft. After he fell past the San Francisco 49ers at 3 and the Panthers at 8, the Saints began calling teams about trading up from 28, according to a source. The Saints couldn't find anyone who wanted to move back that far, but they had a deal in the works to get number 16 from the Arizona Cardinals, one pick too late.
Okay, we'll talk about it from an interesting perspective. Let me tell you what I know. That is not true. They were never the teams never spoke. The Cardinals never had a discussion with the New Orleans Saints. 28 was way too far down the list for the Cardinals. They were interested in moving down, but they weren't going to move down from 16 to 28. I mean, it just weren't going to happen. They weren't going to go to one of the final five picks of the first round of that draft. Because there was players they liked. They would have missed out on Zaven Collins. They would have missed out on Quiddy Pay. They would have missed out on Najee Harris. They would have missed out on a lot of the guys that they liked. So we could talk about it, like what they could have gotten there at 28. But my belief from what I know is that there was never a discussion between the Cardinals and the New Orleans Saints about trading that pick. New Orleans may have been looking to trade up, but it wasn't with the Cardinals.
Steve Keim on the Doug and Wolf show last week, post-draft, the general manager was asked if they did try to move out of 16.
Yeah, I mean, when you're in the NFL draft and you're a general manager and you're in the first round, you have a number of conversations moving both ways. And that's what it generally is. It's just conversations. But, nothing really materialized. And when we got to the point where we were at 16, and once the Patriots took Mac Jones, we felt very strongly that Zaven Collins was our guy, and that was a decision we needed to take moving forward.
I believe you for a couple reasons. Number one, because of you doing your thing. I believe that, and I trust in that. Number two, if you go down to 28 where the Saints did draft, and you see who wasn't available to the Arizona Cardinals, it is easy to believe that they would not have wanted to go down that
far.
They
did not want to go down that far.
Because a lot of the names, I mean, these were the guys that were gone. Now, one of them obviously was by the Cardinals at 16 was Zaven Collins, but I think he probably would have been gone then. We don't know for sure, but he probably would have been.
Yeah, he would have been gone.
Other guys who had been associated with the Cardinals. By then, Elijah Vera Tucker, he was one of your Gambo 5. He was gone at 14.
Yeah, only one of my guys would have been left.
Quiddy Pay was gone at 21. He went to the Colts. Caleb Farley wasn't on your list,
no.
But had the Cardinals moved back, he might have been on a different Gambo 5 list potentially, right?
I would have not had him as a first round at any point in the first round for the Cardinals.
Well, regardless,
he, first round
he was gone to the Titans at number 22.
Okay.
Najee Harris was gone to the Steelers at number 24.
Yep.
Rashad Bateman, the receiver out of Minnesota, was gone to the Ravens at number 27.
Which was a prime trade-down target. Rashad Bateman would have... What I always said about two of the other guys, you missed the quarterback from Northwestern. Can I throw him in there?
Sure.
Greg Newsom.
He was gone at 26 to the Browns.
So what I have always said about trading down is, if they traded down, Greg Newsom could have been in play. But they would have never taken Greg Newsom at 16. At 20, you know, later on in the draft, if they traded down, yes. Same thing with Rashad Bateman. But you're talking about Greg Newsom being gone, Rashad Bateman being gone, Najee Harris being gone, Quiddy Pay being gone. There was no discussion with the Cardinals and the New Orleans Saints about moving down to 28 and the Saints moving to 20 to 16. And the simple reason is what you're pointing out right now. Too many good players were gone.
Yeah, here's who was left. Eric Stokes, the cornerback from Georgia, who a lot of people thought was a reach. He was left. He was the 29th pick. Peyton Turner was the pick by the Saints at number 28, which they, you know, the defensive end out of Houston, a lot of people ripped them for that. Gregory Rousseau, the edge rusher from Miami.
Which we said they didn't really have a lot of interest in.
Owe, the outside linebacker from Penn State. He was the 31st pick. Joe Tryon, the outside linebacker from UW, was the 32nd pick. And then if you go into the early parts of the second round, these players clearly would have been available. You start talking about Tyson Campbell, the cornerback out of Georgia. Elijah Moore, the receiver out of Ole Miss. Javonte Williams, the running back out of North Carolina. Javon Holland, the safety out of Oregon. One of the other guys who was on your list.
Number 43 overall.
Trayvon Merrig, yeah. The safety out of TCU. He was the one and only Gambo 5 guy.
He would have been the pick.
Who would have been available.
If they moved out, and again, I'm saying that they were not in discussions with New Orleans to move down, contrary to that report. If they would have done that, because it's fun to talk about, Merrig would have very likely been the pick for them if they were at 28. He did not go in the first round, which was surprising. He ended up going in the second round. He was the 11th pick overall in the second round, number 43. But based on looking at how everything played out,
yeah.
If the Cardinals would have moved down, and again, I'm saying that they were not in discussions with New Orleans at all. There were no conversations between the two. That the Cardinals did not have an interest to go down that far. But if they had, just for the fun of it, I think Merrig would have been the pick. Because the other guys that I had on my list, they're all gone. Quiddy Pay, you know, listen, if the Cardinals had moved down to 21... And, you know, yeah, I think Quiddy Pay could have been the pick if they would have moved down around 2021. Especially, you know, my understanding is Zaven Collins, if it wasn't Zaven Collins, then it would have been Najee Harris. Najee Harris went 24. So if they would have moved down anywhere from 16 to, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, it would have been Najee Harris. Anything further than that, I think It would have been Quiddy Pay, but he went 21.
And then Rashad Bateman enters the picture as well. When I always envisioned trading down for the Cardinals, the sweet spot I always kind of looked at was somewhere in that early 20s range, like you were just talking about a second ago, 20 to 25, 20 to 26. 28 seems like a long way down to go. Now, the intriguing part, and since we're just talking hypothetically here, in a hypothetical trade from the Saints, if Mac Jones is there at 16 and they want to go up and get him, and they're coming all the way back from 28, how much inventory do they have to give up to get him? What are you talking about? I mean, what does that trade look like? Their second rounder wasn't that good. It was later than the Cardinals was. Is it next year's second rounder? Is it next year's first rounder? What's the cost, hypothetically, for the Saints? Because that's part of this equation, too. Half of the story is who was there, who was left, what would the Cardinals have done at 28? The other half of the story is what other inventory would they have gotten from that wanted to move up?
They had the 12th pick in the third round, New Orleans.
Okay.
It would have been that.
I think it would have cost more than
that.
And more. It would have cost a lot more than that.
Yeah, maybe a third and a fifth. I'll give you, move down.
Because that's a lot of spots to move up in the first round.
Yeah, 12 spots up. I would have to look at the Jimmy Johnson rate, but I think it would at least be that pick, the third round pick. Let me see if they had two picks in the third round, New Orleans. They had the one pick in the third round. Yeah, I would think it would be that third. Maybe it was the second.
They also had the 60th pick overall in the second round. So they had a second, they had a third. You know, you wonder, and then what do you do with that inventory? If you're the Cardinals, do you then have the inventory to swing a trade to move up to get Asante Samuel in the second round because you were a little too far back to do it and you were kind of lacking that in the moment? Again, it's all a big what-if scenario, but fundamentally, I kind of agree with the idea. You move down to 28 And a lot of the guys that you think you're kind of looking to get out of the first round, they're gone.
A lot of the guys you really like are gone. So, you know, I don't think there's anything to this. My understanding is there were no conversations with them. But I do think the Cardinals would have liked to move down. But I'm in total agreement with what you said. There was a sweet spot that you don't want to go down anywhere fast. Okay, I can go from 16 to 21 and still get one of the guys I really like. But if I go any further than that, I'm going to miss out on the guys I like.
Text the word bonus right now to 620-620. Listen for your name this afternoon at 3:35. You could win $500. Again, that's the word bonus to 620-620, the Arizona Sports signing bonus. There's some guys on the Suns bench that have hit a little bit of a slump. There's some guys in the Suns starting lineup who have hit a little bit of a slump, which is six games to go in the regular season. Can they turn it around before the playoffs begin? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, Suns are not back in action again until Friday when they host the New York Knicks. They've got six games left in the regular season. Then they'll get a pause for nearly a week while the NBA figures out its play-in situation. It's going to take at least 4 days to kind of figure out Eastern Conference, Western Conference, who gets in with a play-in. So there's kind of a natural break built in right there for the Suns before they start to play. I mean, I don't know. Is it enough? I don't know. We can debate that. But the Phoenix Suns, they're almost there. And look, big picture, Gambo, their second best record in the Western Conference. They seem fairly locked into that. Mm-hmm. They have a 5-2 stretch against the seven teams. But if you dig a little deeper, and if you were watching last night's game, there are some things that are potential red flags for the Phoenix Suns moving forward. And I think first and foremost, there's a lot of different ways we can go with this conversation. But Atlanta's bench throttled the Suns last night.
74 points?
74 points.
74 points. That a Kondru?
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm almost sure you said that wrong, but I know who you're speaking of, yes.
I mean, that's in the fourth quarter, he had that six straight points. And, you know, there was a time, and the Suns just like, you know, like the bull, what's the bull guy that lets the thing go?
Matador.
The Matador, yeah. I mean, that's what there was no defense. And I think tired legs. That's what we're seeing. The Suns are a very good defensive team that are not playing very good defense right now because I think they're tired. But last night it was you get a dunk, and hey, you get a dunk, and you get a dunk, and you get a dunk. Everybody got a dunk. Yep. I mean, it was just there was no defense around the basket. The points in the paint were just incredible. Atlanta was getting everything they wanted in that basketball game last night at the basket, everything. There was just no defense from the Phoenix Suns.
No, there wasn't. And the bench, when you're looking at 74-36 in bench points for Atlanta last night. And we got to talk about a couple of guys on that bench. And I think we have to start the conversation with Cam Johnson a little bit. He is a valuable piece to the machinery, obviously, given what he's provided off the bench, what he's meant to the team off the bench. Last eight games, Cameron Johnson in 28 minutes per game is averaging 7 points. He's shooting 27% from the floor. He's not even shooting 16%.
Well, it was 0 for 6 last night, right? Uh-huh. And then what was he against? He was 0 for something against Cleveland.
Yeah.
He was 0 for something against Cleveland.
0 for 5. I can't remember exactly.
So he was 0 for 6 last night. He didn't make one against Cleveland. So obviously, you know, he is. I think he's tired. I think these guys are tired a little bit. He's a guy that I think you could. You know, you need your three-point shooters in the playoffs. You got to have your three-point shooters in the playoffs. Look, there's something to be said about being well-rested and healthy going into the playoffs, and I'm worried about the well-rested part for the Phoenix Suns right now. I understand that they're winning games, and they've got, you know, but man, these last couple of games, I'm a little concerned about, you know, the bench play and what they're getting out of the bench and guys like that. I'm worried about DeAndre Ayton, too, because I think he's, as I said the other day, I think he's hit a wall.
Yeah.
I really do. I think he's hit an absolute wall. I think these guys need some time off.
And we'll talk about Ayton in a second. I just want to point this out about Cam Johnson. This is his second year in the NBA. In year one, he played in 57 games. And remember, there was a giant break in between those 57 games, right? He's already at 60 so far this year. And there's been, you know, there's been no break like there was last year.
Right.
Is he starting to hit that sophomore wall a little bit? Is the kind of reality of this compressed season starting to catch up with him? Is it starting to catch up with DeAndre Ayton? Now, he was good in the second half against Cleveland. He was active on the boards. He was good with the pick and roll. He was rim running very well. He was getting to the hoop. He was creating a lot of action based off of that. That was a nice game. But over the last couple of weeks or so, DeAndre Ayton has the double-digit rebound games. I think he's on four straight games now where he hasn't hit double digits in rebounds. I don't think he's hit double-digit in shot attempts in the last four or five games. It's weird to talk about, or you just mentioned a second ago, guys needing a day off. It's not the older guys. It's not. I mean, Chris Paul didn't have a great game last night, but I don't know.
The younger guys who haven't played this many games and haven't played pressure situation games like this long as season.
Those are the guys, the Aitons, the Cam Johnsons of the world. Bridges seems to be playing his way through it pretty well, obviously, with how he performed in overtime the other night. He had 18 points last night. He looked fine. He wasn't the problem. But Cam Johnson and DeAndre Ayton, a couple of younger guys, seem to be hitting kind of that young guy wall right now because of this compressed schedule. Those are the ones, if you want to have a conversation about resting guys, kind of feel like we need to start with those guys first and then work our way to the Chris Pauls and the Devin
Bookers. Just a couple of weeks ago, Sports Illustrated did a great story on DeAndre Ayton. The sky's the limit for DeAndre Ayton. He was playing his ass off. We were raving about how well he was. That was 2-3 weeks ago. Since that time, there's been a lot of games. Listen, at some point, you got to catch your second wind. I mean, you know what that is, right? Your second wind. You got to get your second wind. You're tired. Something's going to push you through that. Whatever it is, something's going to push you through that being tired. I'm all for, you know, not conceding the number one seed right now and getting guys rested because I'm concerned about it. I'm not that concerned about getting the number one seed. If I get number two, I get number two. What I'm concerned about more than anything is going into the playoffs rested. I got to give guys a little bit of a mental break, let them recharge their batteries. Hey, you know, it's the same thing when you work for six straight months and all of a sudden you get a vacation. Or you get a three-day weekend. How many people look forward to a three-day weekend? How many people look forward to a four-day weekend? How many people, you know, it's the same thing. I mean, it's a chance to just recharge a little bit. Give the guy a mental break. Give the guy a physical break. Don't have to worry about the game. You know, a lot in baseball, right? Your managers tell you beforehand, hey, you're not going to play tomorrow. That way you don't have to think about it. They don't tell you the day of. They tell you the day before. You're not going to play. So that way you don't have to think about it all night or study or get ready. I think that's what you do. I think you periodically over these next six games, you find a way to give some guys some rest.
Who would you prioritize it for? Who do you give it to first? Who's front of the line? Who needs it?
That's a really, really good question.
If we're going to go with the Gambo theory of, okay, you've made your point. They need to rest some guys. Who are you resting?
Booker? Even though he's got 30-point games and five out of the last six games.
Yeah, I mean, last night he shot the ball very well. He was really the only one who was keeping them in that game.
Yeah, because ultimately I can't go anywhere without him. Ultimately I can't go anywhere without him.
Okay.
So him and Chris Paul would be my two priorities.
Okay.
I do want to get, I know, but I think there's a way to kind of get everybody rest. But I would focus on the two main guys because they could carry a team. They can carry a team. And I'm not going anywhere if they're not rested and healthy.
There's no wrong answer to this question. I probably would start with Ayton. Just because we saw what he can do to a team when he's fresh and when he's engaged and when he's active, and he hasn't looked fresh and active and engaged the last few weeks. Cam Johnson, it worries me, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a self-avowed fan of the man. Dario Saric, the only minutes he got last night were garbage time minutes. That's it. Man. And I'm starting to wonder what – because when they were at their peak – well, not their peak, but when things were going really well – he was one of their top players, and he's fallen off a cliff the last month. He had a little spike after he took those three games off for the ankle injury. I'm concerned. I mean, he's losing minutes to Frank Kaminsky. He's only playing in garbage time. When things are right, he's a valuable contributor. He hasn't been a valuable contributor for a month now.
I'm surprised, too, because you need him. He's your facilitator on that second unit. This was a priority for James Jones to make sure that, you know, that they had him in the fold this year. He was one of their key pieces. So, yeah, I'm definitely a little surprised at that. I mean, I think they need him and he's rested, right? He's had the guys that have had time. Jay Crowder's going to be rested by the time he comes back. You know, Dario should be rested because he's missed a lot of games.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show within the last 24 hours, there have been a couple of productive veteran players released by their NFL team. Could the Cardinals have any interest in adding either of them to their roster, and are more veteran cuts coming? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. Free agency, the bulk of it is over. The draft is over. Undrafted free agents. I haven't seen any official announcement yet from the Cardinals, though we did speak yesterday about how there's really not a lot of space on the roster for a bunch of guys. They've only got like four or five roster spots available, so it's not going to be a very big class of undrafted free agents. But there's always work to be done, right? And there are still, you know, between now and the start of training camp, and heck, even after training camp starts in August, there'll be plenty of opportunities for those time specials, those one-year guys, right? Guys on a veterans minimum, prove-it deals coming in, trying to reclaim their career. And there's along those lines, Gambo, in the NFL today, there were a couple of guys cut. There was one guy signed. And you kind of add it up and you wonder what, if anything, it means for the Arizona Cardinals. Let's start with the Detroit Lions. They cut running back Kerryon Johnson today after a couple of years that he was there.
Yeah, you know, he had that one really good year with them. And this is the thing with a lot of running backs, right? You'll see that, oh, this guy had a really good year. And then he's been just okay. You know, I checked on this to see, you know, I mean, you know, with Kerryon Johnson, it's not like he's an old running back or anything like
that. No, not at all.
Here's a guy who ran for 1,225 yards and 8 touchdowns over 3 years. He had 61 catches for 527 yards and 3 scores. I mean, last year, very irrelevant, 181 yards rushing and 2 scores. He had 52 carries. He gets waived. You know, I don't see interest from the Cardinals. People will always ask me, oh, running back's available. Is that a guy? My understanding is that he's just a guy. Just a guy, not somebody like, oh, he's, you know, we got to go bring him in here. I would not expect them to have any real interest in Kerryon Johnson.
Yeah, and the Cardinals, they, you know, they signed James Conner. I would imagine most of their work is probably done at the running back position. That if Kerryon Johnson were a cornerback, you know, my eyebrow might be raised a little bit wondering if he would be a guy they would want to take a look at, because I know we had the conversation in the hours after the draft and in the days after the draft. I still feel like short-term and long-term, the cornerback question is really unanswered for this team, and I'd like to see them do more.
Sure.
Short-term and long-term. Running back, I feel pretty good about Chase Edmonds. I feel pretty good about James Conner. I feel pretty good about what they've got and what they've done. So that's not that big of a deal. It was who they signed that I thought was really interesting. They signed tight end Darren Fells to a one-year contract.
Man, he's still going strong, isn't he?
35 years old, and in the previous two seasons in Houston combined, 55 catches, 653 yards, and 11 touchdowns. Not great numbers.
No.
But good enough numbers to warrant sticking around a little bit longer, right?
Yeah.
I mean, fairly productive, certainly for a 35-year-old dude.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, that was on the bottom line of the, you know, of the Lions. Hey, they let go of this guy. And by the way, they're Darren Fells, 123 catches, 21 touchdowns. And previous 2 years in Houston, they were able to get him. You know, that one was, you know, one that's interesting, I'm just keeping my eye on this, is the Miami Dolphins.
Oh, you know what? Oh. Let's get into that in a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Because look at what time it is.
Here we go. 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The Arizona Sports Signing Bonus.
Just right now in Mesa, Amir Mock.
Amir
would very much like us to stop what we're talking about for a minute and announce his name. Amir Mock. M-A-C-H. You have 10 minutes to call, 602-260-9870. 602-260-9870. Amir Mock, M-A-C-H. If you didn't hear your name, you can still win. Text the word bonus to 62620. Listen for your name tomorrow at 7:35 in the morning, 1:35 in the afternoon with Bickley and Murata, and then 3:35 right here with us, Burns and Gambo. Once again, Amir Mock from Mesa, 10 minutes, 602-260-9870. Didn't mean to cut you off. As you were, young man,
as I was, the Miami Dolphins cut a safety named Bobby McCain, and he was a fifth-round draft pick. He played as a slot corner and then moved to free safety. He played 6 years with the Dolphins, you know, and he was a pretty good player. Got himself a 4-year, $27 million contract, but they needed to save some money on the cap, so they just released him. He was a team captain guy. He was scheduled to have a cap hit of $7 million. So they decided to let him go. Like, I, you know, we talked about the Cardinals' interest in Trayvon Merrick in the draft, who was a safety. So I would be curious, and again, I don't know an answer to this on Bobby McCain, whether he would be a guy that would be of interest to them. Now, I don't think there's any interest in Kerryon Johnson. Again, he's just a guy.
Yeah.
But I, you know, McCain is interesting because he's a pretty good player. Drafted, you know, he's not that old either. He was drafted in the fifth round in 2015, has 55 starts under his belt, 7 interceptions in his career. Just somebody I'm going to try to do a little more homework on to see if that makes any sense for them.
Yeah, Miami also added a cornerback, Jason McCourty, and a tight end as well. Look, they're going to be guys. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like your roster building is done. There are still plenty of interesting football players that are out there, and there are still plenty of teams that are looking to add guys going into the season. So by no means are the Arizona Cardinals, I would think, are they done signing guys. They will sift through free agency, find their bargains, and move forward.
Yeah, you said the key word, their bargains. Like, there's nobody, like, if any of these guys that just gets cut, hey, listen, I'm a good player, you got to pay me $5 million, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, they're not in that position.
I bet that 85 to 90%, maybe even 95% of the guys on the market right now are guys who think they're worth more than they actually are.
Of course.
Right? And they went through free agency, and they're like, oh, no way, man, I'm not taking that deal. I'm worth more than that. No way, man, I'm not taking that deal. I'm filling the blank. I should be paid X millions of dollars. And the marketplace, supply and demand, 32 teams are going, yeah, no, you're not. And when your price tag comes down, we'll be more than happy to talk. That's going to happen with the Cardinals and some of these players. And I hope it happens at cornerback, and I wouldn't be disappointed if it happened at safety either. That's fine. More depth there would be good. They'll add quite a few guys, I bet, when it's all said and done. And when I say that, 3, 4, 5 guys between now and training camp, I bet they'll add that many guys.
Listen, if I said to you before the draft, hey, the Cardinals are going to add 2 cornerbacks in the draft. Oh, that's great. That's great. Now, where they drafted the guys and who they are, that, you know, that will ultimately determine whether, you know, they're improved at that position or not. But everybody wanted them to get 2 cornerbacks in the draft. They did.
Yeah.
Get 2 cornerbacks. And they got 2 cornerbacks. You could question who they got and when they got them, but they did what they set out to do by adding 2 more.
They did, but are either of them the for sure long-term answer at the
position?
You know what? I mean, that's the soft spot here.
Listen, most people will agree there was only 2 sure things, you know, in this draft at that position. And one was J.C. Horn, the other was Patrick Surtain.
Yeah.
Caleb Farley was not a sure thing. Newsom wasn't a sure thing. Asante Samuel wasn't a sure thing. So there was a lot of question marks outside of 2 guys. And even those 2 guys, we don't know. Look, the top 2 cornerbacks in the draft last year, they both got opportunities to play right away, and they both struggled. So you really don't know. You liked the Gowan pick quite a bit from what I remember after the draft.
We're going to talk about that in a bit,
so obviously we'll see how he pans out.
Yeah, when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, what was the biggest surprise in the NFC West when it came to the NFL draft? Does the Cardinals draft class stack up well against their division rivals? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. We were talking about Tate Gowan a second ago, the 6th round cornerback drafted by the Arizona Cardinals. And of the 2 cornerbacks, he's the one I'm very intrigued by just because it's just 1 year of tape, but it was pretty good tape, and physically he kind of looks the part. I am not the only one. This is from NFL.com. NFC West draft grades, 49ers got it right, Rams took historic gamble. And we'll get to all of these in a minute, but the best pick in the division, the most surprising pick in the division, the biggest sleeper in the division, they gave to Tate Gowan, UCF cornerback from the Arizona Cardinals.
Now, yeah, I'm sure that doesn't surprise you. Well, that seemed to be the guy you liked the most.
I liked him a lot just because of his size and kind of some of his measurables. The fact that many people, Todd McShay, Pro Football Focus, all kind of thought of him as a guy who get taken a lot sooner than the 6th round. So, I mean, there's a reason he's there. There's a reason he slipped, and probably a lot of it had to do with the fact that he took last year off because he had his daughter born prematurely, and he didn't want to bring any COVID into the house. He didn't want to put her at any kind of risk. So he really only had 1 good year of tape, and I'm sure that made a lot of people uncomfortable.
That's good for the Cardinals.
I like this pick.
That's good for the – I do too. I think that there are going to be players that opted out that – that dropped them a round or two, that they were good players, but because there wasn't tape on them, and maybe other teams questioned, well, why didn't you play? Could be a myriad of reasons. And I mean, for some, it might be just, look, I don't, you know, you just haven't played in a while. Because for some of these guys, haven't, you know, by the time they get out there, it's like almost 2 years they haven't played. So I think that there are going to be some gems selected from players who opted out.
Yeah.
That, you know, they opted out for, you know, for all the right reasons, and they just didn't play, and it dropped their draft status.
Gowan was also mentioned by Todd McShay in a NFL Draft 2021 steals 10 undervalued day 3 picks. Gowan was one of the 10 players that was mentioned, and McShay said exactly the same thing. Draft stock took a hit. There was just a sheer lack of tape, but he was one of the highest graded corners in the country in 2019. Only allowed 20 completions all year long, two interceptions.
50 targets, 20 completions.
Yeah, yep. And in man coverage, he was really good as well. So, that you know, it's just 1 year, and it's a little bit of a chance that you're taking because there was no tape last year, but I like the chance. I do want to get to this NFC West draft stuff here, too, because this is from NFL.com. So they looked through the entire division, and they kind of gave out their awards. Best pick in the division, they said it was Trey Lance of the San Francisco 49ers. They thought that was the best pick that any team in the NFC West made during the entire draft.
Really? Trey Lance?
Trey Lance.
Wow. We'll see. I was reading a story with the 49ers where Jed York said, hey, if we're in a situation where Jimmy goes out and takes us to a Super Bowl again and has an MVP caliber season and does it again, there are worse dilemmas to be in. And Jimmy certainly has the ability to do that. Just kind of saying, like, you know, we'll figure it out. Like, we got two quarterbacks now, and if Jimmy plays really well, then, you know, Jimmy could stay. And says, even if Lance doesn't play for 2 years, we still have an extra $100 million to put back into our team because that's when Garoppolo's contract ends.
Yeah. The award for most surprising pick went to the Arizona Cardinals for Zaven Collins. And in the write-up, they wrote, in the 2020 NFL draft, Steve Keim ignored positional needs to draft the fun linebacker in round one. A year later, Steve Keim ignored positional needs to draft the fun linebacker in round one. And they write, look, I get it. Isaiah Simmons is an intoxicating prospect, but they left really good offensive linemen on the board. And when the season started, Simmons wasn't really playing that much, and Kyler Murray took a beating back there behind the offensive line. They wrote, in fairness to Keim, with trading for Rodney Hudson, with getting Brian Winters on the roster, they've done something to bolster up their offensive line. But the kind of unspoken theory here is that Steve Keim kind of likes those bright, shiny linebackers who can do a bunch of really cool things, and he ignores positional needs when he does it.
You know, the only thing I could say to that is, like, look, they play a 3-4, so it's not like they only have one linebacker. Right? Like, it's not a position.
They do field more than one linebacker.
Yeah,
they
play more than one linebacker. Memo, there's not just one wide receiver on the field. So, you know, in a 3-4 situation, they're looking for, you know, four guys out there that could line up, you know, play that linebacker spot, but some guys that could come up on the edge and rush the passer, and some guys that could drop into coverage and coverage a tight end, and some guys that could be strong against the run, and some guys that can, you know, handle the calls for a defense. You're looking for different things. So not every linebacker is the same. So that's the only thing I would say to that. You know, we drafted two linebackers in a row.
Yeah, and the only other thing I would say to it, too, I agree with what they're saying kind of conceptually. You know, I mean, freak linebacker Isaiah Simmons, man, he's just too good to pass up. We got to take him. Freak linebacker and Zaven Collins, oh, he's just too good to pass up. We've got to take him. The one thing I will say, and we talked a lot about Zaven Collins a week ago. You know how in the moment I kind of felt about it, like, really? That's the pick? That's what you need? Madison Bumgarner just gave up a home run. I can't tell who it is, but it's 1-0 right now. Marlins in the bottom of the first after Mad Bun gives up a solo
leadoff
home run.
Homer.
Was it a leadoff homer? Was
a
it? Yep,
leadoff home run.
Yeah, leadoff home run in the game. So the Diamondbacks are already chasing a run in that game. What I was going to say was, if you look at the board and the way it stood a week ago tonight, it wasn't like there was some glaring player on the board that I thought the Cardinals, oh, you got to take that guy. You got to take that guy. Yeah, there wasn't. There wasn't.
Let me go with the next five picks, and you tell me if any of them was a pick. They're like, oh, you know, I could sell this. Next five picks after Zaven Collins.
Okay.
Alex Leatherwood.
No.
From the Raiders.
No.
Jalen Phillips from Miami. Defensive end.
No.
A linebacker from Kentucky, Jermaine Davis.
Not really.
Kadarius Toney, Florida, wide receiver. They like the few guys better than him.
Yeah, I know they like guys better than him. Give me the fifth one.
Quiddy Pay, Michigan.
Yeah.
Defensive end.
Maybe Quiddy Pay, because you could always use edge rushers. Now, I mean, look, the one name, and you laugh when I say this, the one name I was intrigued by at that spot was Najee Harris, which is funny because you're going to draft a running back in the first round, and you pretty much know you're not signing him to a second contract, right? That was the whole downfall of a guy like Najee Harris, and yet if you're talking about immediate, instant impact players, I have a hard time believing that there would have been anybody more impactful immediately than Najee Harris in that moment. I mean, he would have transformed potentially offensively what they are with his versatility, with his strength, with his ability to get those tough yards. It's a risky pick because you're probably not signing him to a second contract. You probably don't want to sign him to a second contract. So in that moment, it's not like there was a player there where I'm like, oh my God, what a mistake. You should have taken this guy instead. I don't think that guy really existed for the Cardinals in the draft at that moment.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I was going to say, isn't it interesting about how much we all kind of changed on Najee Harris as we got closer to the draft?
Yeah, totally. Totally. Because
I think Bickley and Murata are the same way. I think we were all like, you know, running back. Oh, you don't want to draft a running back in the first round. But then when you couldn't get either of the cornerbacks or the top wide receivers, I think that's what it was. When you couldn't get any of the top corners or wide receivers, it was like, damn, Najee Harris could help you.
Two things. You couldn't get any of the wide receivers or top cornerbacks. And number two, the medicals on Caleb Farley were just too risky. If the medicals on Caleb Farley weren't too risky, Caleb Farley's the pick. And you don't even think twice about it.
Right.
You go get the future cornerback.
We ruled him out.
I know we did. But I'm just saying, before we knew to rule him out, before we knew that was not going to happen because of that.
Okay, let me ask you something. If the cornerbacks went 8 and 9, which is what we predicted when we were doing the draft show, 8 and 9.
Right.
If the medicals were good on Caleb Farley, does he last 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15?
No, but you know what it does?
He might not.
It pushes somebody else down.
It does.
It pushes Elijah Vera Tucker down, or it pushes one of the wide receivers down.
Mm-hmm.
Take somebody that the Cardinals might have wanted, maybe not one of the receivers, they went in the top 10.
Maybe the Cowboys go Caleb Farley and then Micah Parsons falls.
Maybe.
But you would have taken Zaven Collins over Micah Parsons.
But maybe Micah Parsons is more of a bait to get somebody to trade up to get him if he's there at 16. It changes the whole dynamic of the draft. Would Caleb Farley have been there? I don't know for sure. But yeah, those things, that's what changed our feeling about Najee Harris, was the realization that dawned on all of us in the days leading up to the draft. The Alabama wide receivers are not going to be there. And Patrick Surtain, he's not going to be there. And J.C. Horn's not going to be there. And once you realize that, you kind of start going into a fallback position. Well, who is going to be there? And at that point at 16, knowing you couldn't take a chance on Caleb Farley, I don't know who else really was the guy they had to have other than Zaven Collins in the first round. There's no name that really pops.
It's a really good point. You always need to look at what – and I think the one name is just Najee Harris, because I think that's what everybody is. The consensus is – you could have had Najee Harris. So that will be the – see, this will be the thing. You'll look at – you know how the Suns, they look at Tyrese Halliburton?
Mm-hmm.
They'll look at anybody else. With the Suns draft, they drafted Jalen Smith. There's only one player Suns fans look at, Tyrese Halliburton. There's only one player Cardinal fans are going to focus on in this draft.
It's probably Najee Harris.
It's Najee Harris.
Yeah.
You're not going to be like, ooh, I want to see how Kadarius Toney did. I want to see how it's just going to be Najee Harris.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station in back-to-back games, the Suns were taken overtime against a bad team and then blown out by Atlanta. Are they getting tired at the worst possible time? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.